With 30 francs a week to spend on drinks, I could take part in the social life of the quarter. We had some jolly evenings on Saturdays in the little bistro at the foot of the Hotel des Trois Moineaux. The brick-floored room, 15 feet square, was packed with 20 people, and the air dim with smoke. The noise was deafening, for everyone was either talking at the top of his voice or singing. Sometimes it was just a confused din of voices. Sometimes everyone would burst out together in the same song, the Marseillaise, or the Internationale, or Madelon, or Les Fraises et les Framboises. Isaiah, a great clumping peasant girl who worked 14 hours a day in a glass factory, sang a song about Elle a perdu son pantalon, tout en dansant le charleston. Her friend, Marinette, a thin, dark Corsican girl of obstinate virtue, tied her knees together and danced the danse du ventre. The old rougiers wandered in and out, cadging drinks and trying to tell a long, involved story about someone who had once cheated them over a bedstead. Ah, cadaverous and silent, sat in his corner quietly boozing. Charlie, drunk, half-danced, half-staggered to and fro with a glass of sham absinthe, balanced in one fat hand, pinching the women's breasts and declaiming poetry. People played darts and diced for drinks. Manuel, a Spaniard, dragged the girls to the bar and shook the dice box against their bellies for luck. Madame F. stood at the bar rapidly pouring chopine of wine through the pewter funnel, with a wet dishcloth always handy, because every man in the room tried to make love to her. Two children, bastards of Big Louis the bricklayer, sat in a corner sharing a glass of syrup. Everyone was very happy, overwhelmingly certain that the world was a good place, and we a notable set of people. For an hour, the noise scarcely slackened. Then about midnight, there was a piercing shout of "Citoyen!" and the sound of a chair falling over. A blonde, red-faced workman had risen to his feet and was banging a bottle on the table. Everyone stopped singing. The word went round, "Shh, Fureur is starting." Fureur was a strange creature, a Limousin stonemason who worked steadily all the week and drank himself into a kind of paroxysm on Saturdays. He had lost his memory and could not remember anything before the war, and he would have gone to pieces through drink if Madame F. had not taken care of him. On Saturday evenings at about 5 o'clock, she would say to someone, "Catch Fureur before he spends his wages," and when he had been caught, she would take away his money, leaving him enough for one good drunk. One week he escaped, and rolling blind drunk in the Place Mange, was run over by a car and badly hurt. The queer thing about Fureur was that, though he was a communist when sober, he turned violently patriotic when drunk. He started the evening with good communist principles, but after 4 or 5 litres, he was a rampant chauvinist, denouncing spies, challenging all foreigners to fight, and if he was not prevented, throwing bottles. It was at this stage that he made his speech, for he made a patriotic speech every Saturday night. The speech was always the same, word for word. It ran, "Citizens of the Republic, are there any Frenchmen here? If there are any Frenchmen here, I rise to remind them, in effect, of the glorious days of the war. When one looks back upon that time of comradeship and heroism, one looks back, in effect, upon that time of comradeship and heroism, when one remembers the heroes who are dead, one remembers, in effect, the heroes who are dead. Citizens of the Republic, I was wounded at Verdun." Here he partially undressed and showed the wound he had received at Verdun. There were shouts of applause. We thought nothing in the world could be funnier than this speech of Fureur's. He was a well-known spectacle in the quarter. People used to come in from other bistros to watch him when his fit started. The word was passed round to bait Fureur. With a wink to the others, someone called for silence and asked him to sing the Marseillaise. He He sang it well in a fine bass voice, with patriotic gurgling noises deep down in his chest when he came to veritable tears rolled down his cheeks. He was too drunk to see that everyone was laughing at him. Then, before he had finished, two strong workmen seized him by either arm and held him down, while Isaiah shouted, "Vive l'Allemagne!" just out of his reach. Ferrer's face went purple at such infamy. Everyone in the bistro began shouting together, "Vive l'Allemagne! A bas la France!" while Ferrer struggled to get at them, but suddenly he spoiled the fun. His face turned pale and doleful, his limbs went limp, and before anyone could stop him, he was sick on the table. Then Madame F. hoisted him like a sack and carried him up to bed. In the morning, he reappeared, quiet and civil, and bought a copy of L'Humanité. The table was wiped with a cloth. Madame F. brought more liter bottles and loaves of bread, and we settled down to serious drinking. There were more songs. An itinerant singer came in with his banjo and performed for 5 sous pieces. An Arab and a girl from the bistro down the street did a dance, the man wielding a painted wooden phallus the size of a rolling pin. There were gaps in the noise now. People had begun to talk about their love affairs and the war and the barbel fishing in the Seine and the best way to faire la révolution and to tell stories. Charlie, grown sober again, captured the conversation and talked about his soul for 5 minutes. The doors and windows were open to cool the room. The street was emptying, and in the distance one could hear the lonely milk train thundering down the Boulevard Saint-Michel. The air blew cold on our foreheads, and the coarse African wine still tasted good. We were still happy, but meditatively, with the shouting and hilarious mood finished. By 1 o'clock, we were not happy any longer. We felt the joy of the evening wearing thin, and called hastily for more bottles, but Madame F. was watering the wine now, and it did not taste the same. Men grew quarrelsome. The girls were violently kissed, and hands thrust into their bosoms, and they made off, lest worse should happen. Big Louis, the bricklayer, was drunk and crawled about the floor barking and pretending to be a dog. The others grew tired of him and kicked at him as he went past. People seized each other by the arm and began long, rambling confessions and were angry when these were not listened to. The crowd thinned. Manuel and another man, both gamblers, went across to the Arab bistro, where card-playing went on till daylight. Charlie suddenly borrowed 30 francs from Madame F. and disappeared, probably to a brothel. Men began to empty their glasses, call briefly, "Sir, Dame," and go off to bed. By 1:30, the last drop of pleasure had evaporated, leaving nothing but headaches. We perceived that we were not splendid inhabitants of a splendid world, but a crew of underpaid workmen grown squalidly and dismally drunk. We went on swallowing the wine, but it was only from habit, and the stuff seemed suddenly nauseating. One's head had swollen up like a balloon. The floor rocked. One's tongue and lips were stained purple. At last it was no use keeping it up any longer. Several men went out into the yard behind the bistro and were sick. We crawled up to bed, tumbled down half-dressed, and stayed there 10 hours. Most of my Saturday nights went in this way. On the whole, the 2 hours when one was perfectly and wildly happy seemed worth the subsequent headache. For many men in the quarter, unmarried and with no future to think of, the weekly drinking bout was the one thing that made life worth living.